It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians walked it off against the Tigers, win the series in with a comeback in the 10th inning. Brian Rocchio makes a nice play in the top of the 10th inning defensively, and then comes up with the big hit, walk-off single after the Tigers had brought the a fifth infielder in to defend against it. What'd you think of the Guardians being able to come back and win the series on Wednesday against Detroit?
Joe, I thought that game was over. You know, in the eighth inning, I thought, you know, okay, they're done. This, you know, they just didn't, they couldn't get anything going offensively. And then, you know, just like three almost amazing runs that they scored at the end of that game.
Yeah, started off with Brian Rocchio getting a base hit and coming around, stealing second and coming around and scoring. And then in the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth, you got David Fry up there and the ball that he hit. You know, even David Fry said after the game, he thought, oh, well, let it blow foul. Don't let it get caught and I'll get another shot with another strike. But the ball ended up carrying over the fence in right field, in the short wall in right.
Yeah, that was crazy. The Tigers right fielder, he looked like he was running a 100-yard sprint or something, 100 meters. He just was chasing the ball. He had no chance at catching it, but he was chasing the ball toward the foul line, and all of a sudden the ball just dropped over the wall. It was amazing. That's the home run of the year.
Yeah, 40-degree launch angle, I think 98 exit velocity. But only a home run in 11 out of 30 ballparks in the major leagues for David Fry. But, hey, it caught it at the right time. Fry had actually moved around, and he had started the game in left field, moved behind the plate after the Guardians sort of went for it in the seventh after Kyle Manzardo got a two-out single in the seventh. They made a whole bunch of defensive changes. But Manzardo came through and sort of sparked them. It didn't score a run, but it sort of got the momentum going for them after their offense had laid dormant for about six innings.
Yeah, just a pretty nice swing by Manzardo. You know, took ball to left field for his first big league hit. And, you know, just I'm sure that had to feel great for him after going, 0 for 7 with a bunch of strikeouts. He gets that the pressure off his back. And I'm sure they were his teammates were really happy for him.
Yeah, he said they were giving him a hard time when he got back to the dugout. And Stephen Vogt talked about that and just said, you know, let him, guys be guys in that situation and give him a hard time. Because, yeah, he was 0 for 7. In his first two games at the plate with five strikeouts. And, you know, I'm sure he was thinking he was never going to get that first hit. But now he says, now I can just go out and compete. And that's what he told reporters after the game. And we expect to see that as he moves forward. Brian Rocchio, just a real solid game for him. Something he's needed because, you know, he's sort of been up and down this year. There have been times when he's been all right and times when he sort of looked like a rookie out there, but he did not look like a rookie in the top of the 10th inning with Javier Baez, the automatic runner at second base, and Emmanuel Clase on the mound. Clase out there in the 10th inning trying to get you to the bottom of the 10th without letting Detroit score a run, and that's exactly what happened. Ryan Velotti at the plate, and he hits a smash, a 99-mile-an-hour smash up the middle. Rocchio fields it and sort of reads that Baez is a little too far away from second base, so he throws behind him. Andrés Giménez had signaled to him with a little whistle, hey, I'm going to be here. Perfect throw, perfect flip throw from Rocchio. Giménez makes the catch, makes the tag before Baez can get his arm around and get back to second base. And you've eliminated the lead runner with nobody out in the 10th inning. And that's a huge advantage then for the home team right there. Your expected winning percentage in that situation is going to go way up because it's eliminated the ability to score a run without a hit.
Yeah, just a huge play. And what was Javi Baez doing, Joe? Where was his head? I mean, that's a rookie mistake. This guy's been in the big leagues forever. I'm not sure what he was doing. Where he got caught in no man's land. That was a huge out. I thought that was a turning point because, as you said, they eliminate the automatic runner. I mean, Velotti still gets to second base on a wild pitch by Class A, but now there's two outs. You know, there's at least one out or two outs.
Right.
You know, one. Yeah. So
yeah,
you know,
it was the first out. So essentially, you can't score a run without a base hit in that situation. You can't bunt a guy over and then sack fly or ground out to get him in without the benefit of a hit. As we've seen happen, you know, so very often since this automatic runner rule has been put in, you know, there have been teams that can do that. That's why when you're on the road, you sort of have to play for two runs in that situation once you get to extra innings. And in this situation, Detroit got no runs. And when that happened, it was only a matter of time before the Guardians got that run in the 10th. I did notice when we get to the 10th inning and Ramon Laureano's the runner on second base, Tyler Freeman up there for the first at bat, he gets a bunt down, and he told me after the game that you know, the pitches were coming in and in on your fists, and he was expecting the ball to be there, but it sort of got up on him a little bit. He gets down the perfect sacrifice bunt, and as he's running up the first baseline, he sort of pumped his fist a little bit. He's like, "Yeah, I executed it." You know, he didn't even care if he was out at first base. He got Laureano to third. And that was all he needed to do. And then you look up and you've got, you know, five infielders all of a sudden. There's something we haven't seen a lot of.
Yeah. And, you know, that out in at the top of the top of the 10th inning with Baez, you know, that allowed, you know, Stephen Vogt and the Guardians to kind of just play old school baseball. All they got to do is score one run. So you bunt the guy over to you know, third. Freeman, like you said, great sack bunt. And then, you know, Rocchio does his thing. He does it. And he didn't wait, man. First pitch right into the open spot in center field where they had brought the fifth infielder in.
Yeah, and that fifth infielder was Wenzel Perez, who has played some infield this year. He, you know, he's one of those versatile players. He can play both outfield and infield. I believe he's been a second baseman before or a shortstop for A.J. Hinch in Detroit. You know, the funny part of that is the line drive that Rocchio hit probably would have been caught if Perez had stayed where he was in center field. And, you know, it would have set up a more exciting finish at the plate. But I think Rocchio will take it. I think he'll take that easy line drive base hit up the middle. Great approach, great swing. And, you know, he was the only Guardians player with two hits in that ball game. Everybody else just took a big fat over. Josh Naylor, Jose Ramirez, not a lot of success against Reese Olson, who had come into the game 0-4. But this was after Tanner Bibee had sort of had a meltdown there in the fourth inning. We saw him throw 44 pitches in the fourth inning and basically turn a two-run lead into a two-run deficit.
Yeah, and, you know, Bibee, you know, he's been, like, up and down, Joe. You don't know exactly what you're going to get from him from game in and game out. And the Tigers kind of hammered, you know, the first three innings, he was on cruise control. And then, like you said, runs into that big inning in the fourth, four hits, four runs, You know, he can't hold a two to nothing lead, and then he's gone. You know, in four innings, and then you got to put the pressure on that bullpen again. You know, they really, you know, just when you thought they were turning the corner in the rotation, you know, Bibee goes four, and the game before, Logan Allen goes two and a third.
Yeah, we'll get to the job that the bullpen did yesterday because it was amazing, and Stephen Vogt said as much. But just staying on Bibee for a second, it's that inability to finish batters off. It's getting to two strikes and not being able to finish guys. And this is not a new thing or a new problem or a new issue for a young pitcher. I think our expectations of Tanner Bibee after last season, after what he was able to accomplish, are so high that we just sort of take for granted the fact that he's still, you know, 23 years old and 24 years old. And it does not have a full major league season under his belt yet. He's still probably the best that they've got right now, but he's still on that learning curve as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe, because, you know, he didn't walk anybody, no walks yesterday, five strikeouts, but he just got, you know, he just once the ball started rolling downhill, he couldn't stop it. Double, single, hit by pitch, double, sacrifice fly. You know, that's a what, one, two, three, four, five hitter span where, you know, he could only get one out and the snowball was, you know, he couldn't stop the snowball from coming down the hill.
Yeah, and I go back to, you know, Trevor Bauer when he was in, you know, at sort of this point in his development, and Aaron Civale when he was at this point in his development. Guys that we know can strike out hitters in bunches and get on a roll and go like that. Guys who like to throw a lot of pitches to get outs. It's just not an efficient way to get through things, and one of the last sort of pieces of development to come for guys like Bauer, guys like Civale, apparently now guys like Tanner Bibee, is, you know, how to finish off a batter efficiently and get through your start, get deeper into your start, because you haven't spent, you know, 6, 8, 10 pitches on a batter in a game. And you go back to the start of that fourth inning for Tanner Bibee. The big thing that really sort of derailed the whole start was Andy Ibañez, who, you know, had a monster game the night before. He put up a 10-pitch at-bat to open that inning that resulted in a base hit to lead off that fourth inning. And, you know, that really just sort of took the steam out of Bibee's sails.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, he seems to, you know, it's a good point, Joe, because, you know, he throws a lot of pitches, and, you know, you eventually run into problems that way. He's given up hits, and, you know, every pitcher is going to give up hits, but you can't give up a bunch of them in a row. You've got to be able to, like you said, finish guys off. You know, after the 10-pitch at bat, he comes back and strikes out Perez. But then, you know, the avalanche starts. So it's a tough game for Bibee. And who knows? He could be much better the next start. You know, he's been really inconsistent. He was that way in spring training. And I think you're right. I mean, we've got to remember this is his first full year in the big leagues. You know, last year, no one really knew him. Now people have videotape and they've scouted him. They know what he throws. So he might have to make an adjustment, you know, right now.
Yeah. And in no way saying, I mean, he can absolutely make those adjustments and he's committed to doing those things. So I expect to see that swing in his favor. But again, like you said, up and down this season, inconsistent. The last step in that development to come is gaining that consistency by being able to sort of know that you don't have to strike everybody out, that you can pitch to contact at certain points in the game and not get burned. And Bibee will figure that out eventually. Want to remind our listeners that subtext is the best way to get updates on the club throughout the season. As we go forward, go to cleveland.com/subtext or send a text message to 216-208-4346. Hoynsey and me, we send a lot of text messages back and forth with our subtexters and have been doing that all season long. Looking forward to more in that regard. Hoynsey, they go on the road now. They stay in the AL Central. The games in front of them are very winnable games against the White Sox, the worst team in baseball right now, only 9 wins. What's on the agenda now that they're in Chicago for 4 games? I gotta imagine anything less than 3 wins in this series should be seen as a complete failure.
Yeah, Joe, the danger is, you know, looking past the White Sox, you know, looking past the White Sox and, you know, kind of zeroing in on the next series against Texas, the World Series champs. You know, Joe, the White Sox are starting to play better. You know, they've still lost 6 of their last 8 games, but, you know, they prevented a sweep last night by beating the Rays. They've got, you know, Jimenez back. You know, they are still a dangerous team. They're going to pitch their best pitcher tonight, their best starter, Fetty, who pitched well against Cleveland at Progressive Field last month. So it's going to be interesting. You would hope that they're smart enough to not overlook these guys and just look at the record.
Yeah, and there are guys who have had success against the White Sox in their career. Obviously, Jose Ramirez has always played very well against Chicago, particularly in Chicago. We all remember what Josh Naylor is capable of at Guaranteed Rate Field in the month of May. In particular, we've seen him have some pretty amazing games there. So a lot of confidence, and they've got Ben Lively, who has been one of their best pitchers over the last several weeks, going tonight in that matchup with Eric Fetty. What do you like that you've seen out of Lively just consistency wise in his you know, few starts that he's had for the Guardians?
I like the fact that he goes right after hitters, Joe. He doesn't mess around. Last start against the Angels, 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 5 Ks, 85 pitches, 54 strikes. You know, he's really confident out there. You know, he knows he doesn't light up the radar gun, but he has some deception, and you know, he knows how to pitch. He's been around the block a couple times.
Yeah, that's the best compliment Stephen Vogt has paid him, I think, so far. Is he just says he's a pitcher. He goes out there and however he knows how to get you out is what he's going to do to get that out and get deep into a ball game. And we've seen it time and again. All right. I want to circle back and spend a little time talking about the bullpen. You sort of alluded to it, touched on it earlier. And, you know, we mentioned the effort after Bibee goes out after the 4th inning. You know, essentially the Guardians had to make up 6 innings out of that bullpen. And they got the job done. Nick Sandlin, Sam Henches, Hunter Gaddis came in through 2 scoreless innings. And they got the ball to Emmanuel Clase. And after the game, Stephen Vogt was effusive in his praise of his relief pitchers. Just what did you think of the effort yesterday and really up to this point the entire season?
Yeah, the bullpen has been great since day one. Yesterday, like they threw 6 scoreless innings, like you said, Joe. They give up 2 hits in 6 innings to a pretty good Tiger team, and then they have no walks in 6 innings, and they strike out 4. I mean, that's amazing. You know, to win a game like that, when it turns into a bullpen game like this, you know, you can't make one mistake. And you know, Henches and Sandlin and Gaddis and Clase, they didn't make one mistake over 6 innings. I mean, to give up only 2 hits over 6 innings, no runs, you know, no walks, that's amazing. And the pessimist in me, Joe, keeps waiting for those balls. I mean, you cannot keep going to this bullpen like this day in and day out.
Yeah, eventually something's got to give with some of these guys. However, the performances up to this point have been Superb, like you said. You got to be conscious of health and not overdoing it with some of these guys. I have a lot of faith in Carl Willis. I think Brad Goldberg's been doing a great job of keeping the guys ready and keeping them up and prepared. So until one of the wheels falls off, I think they've got to continue going this way. You know, even when Gavin Williams is ready to come back, it's not like he's going to be able to go deep into games very, very early. And once he's returned, and you know, they haven't made any moves in that rotation to bring in anybody who's a little more stretched out or able to go deeper. So this is how it's going to be maybe for the foreseeable future. And, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Joe, this is like an old school bullpen. I remember Gabe Paul, when I first started covering baseball, said pitches don't wear out, they rust out, you know, so you got to keep using them. And maybe that's the key, but I'm waiting for the trap door to open here, Joe.
Well, hopefully that doesn't happen anytime soon. All right, Hoynsie, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll check in with you after the series opener tomorrow from Chicago, and we'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.